Yes, welcome to the dark. It's time once again for another episode of A Scott in the Dark. And not only are we doing this episode as a podcast, I'm also shooting it as a video right there. So you can join us, and by us, I mean me, on the YouTube channel. I almost said the Facebook channel. You can do it on the Facebook channel too. I'll list it there. But join us on the YouTube channel and you can actually see, you can hear Lucy in the background. She's barking at something. But my name is Scott Swenson, and you're listening to A Scott in the Dark, and this is a periodic podcast for haunters. And what I thought I would do with this particular episode is to go kind of back to the roots, back to the whole reason I started doing this in the first place, and that was to share ideas and to do sort of basically seminars via podcast, like I was often doing at various and sundry trade shows and that sort of thing. And by the way, I do have a couple of trade show appearances coming up, which I'm going to plug shamelessly right now. The first one coming up is July 14th, I believe. July 14th, I will be at the Southeastern Haunt Enthusiasts or Halloween Enthusiast Convention. Hang on, we'll just edit that. We won't edit that. Who am I kidding? We're not going to edit that. We'll just let it stay in there. On July 14th, I will be at the Southeast Halloween Enthusiast Convention, and that's in Ocala. And I'll be part of a panel with some really wonderful people, actually. It's a panel that is hosted by my friend Robbie Lepree and has folks from all different kinds of theme park haunt. So I will be there. Then I fly straight from there to Austin, Texas, where I will be doing a seminar with my friend Jill Witecki at the League of Historic American Theaters convention. And we'll be talking about how to monetize your ghost stories if you happen to have ghosts that live in your historic theater, ways to create either ghost tours or haunted tours or whatever, based on those stories. And then later in the month, I'll be out in Long Beach at the what used to be Haunt Journal is now Seasonal Entertainment Source, their leadership symposium. And that will be at the Queen Mary in Long Beach. So I'm very excited to be out there. And that's at the end of July. That is the July 30th. So anywho, if you'd like to meet me and say hi, please, please, please do. Always come up and say hi. I will always be wearing probably something that has a light bulb on it, my logo. I'm also probably, I haven't decided yet, but I'm also probably going to be attending Midsummer Scream, which, as you've heard from previous podcasts, that I absolutely love that show. It's just a super cool show, and if I can make it work, I'm going to be out there for that as well. So, again, whole bunch of shows coming up. But right now, we've got this show to deal with, so let's talk about what this show is really all about. As you see, this show is called Make It Cheap. And I am a firm believer that you do not need a huge amount of finance to make a really cool haunted experience. Now, when I say that, people often say, yeah, Scott, well, you know, you've worked for Busch Gardens and The Vault, and you've always worked with big budgets and blah, 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 blah. And that's true. I have. But you'd be surprised how even with big budget events, some of the coolest things come from those cheap little creative ideas. And, you know, part of the reason that things like Busch Gardens Hollow Scream or The Vault of Souls or any of those haunt projects, those particular haunt projects that I've worked on, part of the reason we could do so much is because we were very frugal. We tried to find very creative ways to make things happen. Now, I should probably start by saying one of my favorite phrases when it comes to money. Make it good, make it fast, make it cheap, pick two. Because you can make it good and fast, but it ain't going to be cheap. You can make it good and cheap, but it ain't going to be fast. And you can make it cheap and fast, but it ain't going to be good. So what we're going to focus on is try to find ideas and ways to make things cheap and good. Because let's face it, we all want to make some money, whether you are a professional haunter Obviously, that's where you want to make the money. If you're a home hunter, you want to get as much as you possibly can for your dollar. So if you can do a full front yard haunt that is, you know, made for $50 and it looks like $1 million, great. That's what you want to do. If you are a professional haunter and you want to, you know, make sure you get the most out of your investment, you obviously want to spend as little as you possibly can and still have a really high-end quality product. So use your creativity, because I here's another phrase I'm going to use. Creativity will provide. If you are creative, you'll find a way to make your budget work. And that creativity may mean that you have to slightly tweak or rewrite your storyline. It may mean that you have to think a little bit outside the box. It may mean that you have to call in favors from friends. It may mean that you have to build your own props. And in all honesty, it may mean that you have to break down and buy some hero props, which we'll talk about in a few minutes. We'll talk about that a little bit later. But the thing about, you know, being cheap and still being good, and sometimes actually even being iconic, is something that's been going on in cinema, in film, for years and years and years. A couple of my favorite stories. We have Monty Python. When the movie Monty Python and the Holy Grail was made, it was made on a shoestring budget. It went on to earn a fortune, but it was made on a shoestring. And there are certain scenes that if you see, you know, they're shooting like up a hill and you see a castle in the background, many of those castles are just cardboard cutouts that are painted to look like castles. It's really hard to see, but the only reason I know it is I actually looked it up, and of course it's on the internet, so it's got to be true. You know, anything you see, read, or hear on the internet has got to be true. It doesn't surprise me, though, because the whole idea behind the iconic coconuts of the clop, clop, that's just my hands. It's not really coconuts, which you folks just saw, because you're watching and you're listening. I just didn't poke the microphone. That's a whole different show. I just pointed to the microphone and said, "You're listening." But so it was. That was just my cupped hands. But originally, that was supposed to be a full, you know, horse scene, big sequence. They were supposed to have real horses, but they got cut from the budget. So they came up with something creative, clever, and it became iconic. Another really fun example that I think hits the haunt industry is the Michael Myers mask. And I know a lot of people knew this. I just recently found out about this, but it makes me laugh. The Michael Myers mask, when they got the first one, it was a William Shatner mask. It was a Captain Kirk mask, which they painted white to make it different and not look like Shatner. It's a Don Post mask, and apparently when they went to make some of the sequels to Halloween, they only found one of the original Halloween masks, because they weren't anticipating it being a full franchise, and they found markings on the neck that said Don Post, and it had a number, and they contacted Don Post, and they said, they read off the number, and they said, yeah, that's our Captain Kirk mask. So it shows that you don't have to spend $1 billion to have your own private mask made. Take something that already exists that you can get for a few bucks, paint it, and it can become iconic. And we're going to talk a lot about that. You know, that's a perfect example, actually, of our first topic, or part of our first topic, because I want to talk a little bit about scenic first and how to do affordable scenery for your haunts. Please don't do black visqueen walls, unless you somehow find a way to make black visqueen exactly what it, you know, what the wall should be covered in. You know, if you're doing, I don't know, if you're doing a slaughterhouse or something, maybe, I don't know, you might be able to get away with black visqueen, but I've seen so many people decide to just slap up black visqueen and say, oh, well, it's black, so it's got to be scary, or it's black, you can't see it. I don't know what the mindset is. It's sort of like being, to me, it's like being trapped in a giant garbage bag. So unless you can find a way to make it work with your story, and I suppose there are ways to make it work, try to find slightly more clever ways. And I guess one of the first things that I would look at is you know, reuse what you've got. If you've, you know, one of the nice things about working at Busch Gardens back in the day was that we had a full warehouse of stuff that came from, you know, earlier haunted attractions, like earlier years of Hollow Scream or from other shows, or, you know, and pretty much all of the costumes at Hollow Scream were old show costumes that we redid. Yes, the costume team would, you know, rebuild them or repurpose them or distress them, but they were all reused stuff. And quite often, we'd go to the warehouse and just walk around and go, what do we got a lot of? Let's see if we can write something that matches what we have. So it is completely fine to reuse stuff. So write based on stuff that you have. If you've got a bunch of chain link, you know, chain link fence, or have access to a bunch of chain link fence, write something that takes place in a junkyard. Write something that takes place in, I don't know, even a tennis court. I don't know. Someplace that there might be, that would be a really bad idea. Although, you know my theory, state a place, and then add the phrase, gone horribly, horribly wrong, and you've got a haunted attraction. But, you know, the idea of reusing stuff, everyone's like, well, I want to rebuild everything, or I want to make everything new and fresh. You can throw a coat of paint on something, and people will not be able to tell that it's the same thing. You know, obviously, once you've got the walls of your haunt, you can reposition them, move them around. Actually, if you want to learn more about that, Leonard Pickles probably got some of the cleverest ways of doing that, of making things modular. I'm clearly not smart enough in that area, but, you know, make stuff that you can reuse, make stuff that you can repaint to repurpose. I mean, another example of something that happened in movies that you may or may not realize is in the original Star Trek movie, the movie, Star Trek The Motion Picture, which not many of you are old enough to have seen in the theater, but I am. And, oh, and there's one of you now saying something about it. I don't know. But the idea behind that particular, there in that particular movie, there is a prop. There is a space station that is this model. This is back in the day before, you know, they did CGI everything. It was a model that was a space station. And then that exact same model is used again in Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Khan! That was just for my friend Billy Martinez, who could do it a lot better and sound a lot more like Shatner. But anyway, in Wrath of Khan, they took the exact same model, repainted it, and flipped it upside down. And if you search it online, it's really funny because you can look at stills from both Star Trek The Motion Picture and Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, look at that space station and go, yep, that's exactly the same model, only flipped upside down. We did the same thing at Hollow Scream, even with entire houses. You know, sometimes we would, you know, take a haunted house and just turn it around and make the entrance the exit and the exit the entrance. Make it completely backwards. And there was one particular time that, this was for a house called Trapped in the Walls, and the first 2 years we ran it one direction, and then they said, from an operational standpoint, it's got to be much easier if we ran it the other way. And of course, I dug my heels in as the creative guy, and I said, no, it was designed to be done this way, and we can't do it the other way. And they said, Scott, please just go out and walk it. And sure enough, when I walked it backwards, we turned a few props around, we changed a couple of rooms, but we made an entirely new house just by changing the way guests experience it. So that's kind of the ultimate in reusing what you've already got. You know, another example from Hollow Scream as to how to do that is to we did it in a couple of scare zones where we did sort of like the greatest, the best of the past, or all of Zombie Containment Unit. When we did ZCU, all of Zombie Containment Unit, all of that haunted house was all pulled from the warehouse. And that was because we had to make it fit within certain budget numbers. So it's done all the time. Write based on what you have. Write based on things that you know you can get a hold of easily. And if Visqueen happens to be it, then write a haunt where, you know, if you use like, if you use clear plastic tarps, you know, maybe the whole thing is that it takes place in a sterile environment, so everything has to be wrapped in plastic, and then that gives itself its own sort of style to it. I don't know, but write based on what you either have or what you can get your hands on cheaply. So really, I guess my cheap tip here is plan ahead, plan accordingly. If you've got a bunch of junker cars, they make huge, great set pieces. Sometimes you have to take the motors out and drain all the fluids, depending on whoever the fire marshal is in your area. But still, they're big, cheap props. So, you know, write something that uses that. I just glanced down at my notes. See, I do have notes. I do actually have notes. Another example of stuff being reused, and no wonder I like two of these things so incredibly much. Apparently, the body armor and the helmets that were used or were created for the movie Starship Troopers were reused again in the 2001 version of Planet of the Apes and one of my favorite movies of all time, or favorite series of all time, Firefly, which apparently used Starship Troopers helmets and body armor. That has really nothing to do with the show, but it is kind of fun. We'll just take those notes and, yeah, move on. Okay, so some of the other stuff we were talking about as far as scenic goes, you know, if you've got local construction companies that are looking for help in tearing stuff down, a member of my family, he was my uncle's father, my uncle by marriage is, anyway, a member of my family was a rather clever carpenter, and he actually used to work with local construction companies to help them take stuff apart, because anytime there's a renovation, there's always some sort of a demo phase, and what he would do is he would say, hey, you know what, I'll come in and help you demo if I can just take the stuff that I take down away. So he had, and he was demoing like churches, and he had like church pews, and he had beautiful carved wood door frames, and I mean he just got some amazing stuff, and he got it pretty much for free because he went in and put in the sweat equity. He did the labor to tear down the stuff. You can do that on a much smaller level too. You know, if you want to work with a local contractor in your area, just say, you know, I'll tell you what, I'm looking for parts and pieces for my haunt, and that can be honestly can be anything from, you can get hardware, doorknobs, hinges, all kinds of stuff that way. You can, if you're really careful, and depending on what you're tearing out, you might be able to get some workable lumber. Let's face it, we've all done haunts that have toilets in them. So you could probably get free or very inexpensive toilets. It's basically just kind of going to the contractor and saying, you know, if you are a general contractor, obviously you probably do this already, but just to say, hey, you know what, I'll put in the sweat equity to tear the stuff out, and I'll haul it away, and you haul it away to your garage or your warehouse, or directly to your haunt if you keep the space year-round, and you can get a lot of stuff for free. You know, I'm not above dumpster diving, and this is just kind of one step above that. And another example of how to make the most, you know, of what you've got, how to get things cheaply, is to use what's there. You know, write to what is in the space. I first learned this when years and years and years ago, at Howl & Scream, we did a house called The Labyrinth of Lost Souls. And I learned this from John Hawkins and the guys at Oak Island. There was a big power panel in the space that we were building the haunted house. And it wasn't used anymore. It wasn't connected to anything. But it was gigantic and really cool looking. And would also be very, very expensive to move, to get out of there. So what we did was we just incorporated it into the story, and the Oak Island team put it into their concept, and we worked through it, came up with, and then we actually duplicated it later, because the whole concept of the house was you were sort of stuck in purgatory and you came back to the same room again. But we never would have had that inspiration had we not actually looked at what we already had, because we didn't have to pay a dime for that first big power panel, because it was already there. And we actually ended up saving money by using it because we didn't have to tear it down. Probably the most glaring example or wonderful example was in the Vault of Souls. You know, when I wrote the Vault of Souls, one of the star rooms in every single solitary year, well, the 3 years that we did it, one of the star rooms was the actual vault itself. I never, ever could have afforded on any budget to have built something that amazing. The door itself was, you know, 18 tons. It was, you know, very intricately done, and it was just a beautiful space. So again, taking what you've got and working it into your storyline is a great way to save money. You know, you can change the story to match your area. There's a project that I'm working on right now, which hopefully will be announced very soon, and I can talk about it here, where I designed the entire house based on the fact that the space that we were using is a loading dock, and it's just part of the space, but is this wonderful loading dock with these bare brick walls and a whole lot of metal and chain, and it just inspired writing the entire piece. So I guess, again, to sum up all of this babbling, make sure that you plan accordingly so that you write your story based on what you have available to you, whether it's the location itself or things that you can tear out of other people's houses or things that you've used in other haunts and just turn them upside down, paint them a different color, and it will save you a ton of money and still make things look new and fresh. I mentioned earlier about costuming. You know, costuming is for haunts is something that everybody thinks, well, you know, it'll be easy. We'll just put somebody in hobo costumes and masks and call it a day. Probably not the best way to approach it. You always have heard me say, or many of you have heard me say, it's important to have a costume designer. It is important to have somebody who can sort of be the overarching eye to see how all the costumes come together, to see what goes with what, especially if you're doing anything period. You know, if you're doing a period piece, like Vault of Souls was all 1920s, so I needed somebody there who understood how to make things look like the 1920s. But, you know, the idea is, instead of going out and buying all of your costumes from a costume house, you're probably going to be better off to go out and buy clothes. And, of course, the first thing I say, if you don't have a full costume warehouse like Busch Gardens did, or, you know, old costume storage, go to your thrift stores. Go to your thrift stores, and again, not just after you've decided what you're going to do, but go to your thrift stores as you're writing the stuff and say, you know, walk up and down the aisles and realize, oh gosh, there's a ton of men's suits, or there's a ton of like really bad 1980s prom dresses or old bridesmaid dresses. And you can take old bridesmaid dresses and bloody them up and do an entire zombie prom. Yeah, it's been done many, many times. But, you know, use your thrift stores, use your local thrift stores. And there's a thrift store here in Tampa, actually, that has a frequent shopper program. Yes, it's true. I'm not kidding. And the more stuff that you buy, you actually accrue points. And the last time I went, I had a $10 credit. They also send me, it's an app. Actually, it's not even an app. They just take my cell phone number and they text me when they've got sales going on. And, you know, anytime they say, you know, all tickets that are blue are 50 cents off today, or 50 cents today, then I'll go in and get a whole bunch of stuff. You also have to utilize your friends. Reach out to your friends. You know, look out on Facebook. You'd be surprised how many people are willing to give stuff up just to get it out of their house. I have friends who work for a major cruise line, for example, and they were clearing stuff out of their costume warehouse, and it was stuff that had just been sitting there. And a lot of it was, you know, kind of junky. But they called me and they said, hey, you want to come and look through this stuff? And sure enough, I did. And I got a giant bolt of orange fur. I have no idea what I'm going to do with it, but I have it now. I don't know. I can see maybe making a giant Muppet of some sort. But some hats and some masks and some old tattered wigs and, you know, stuff that you can kind of cobble together. That's the cool thing about Haunt. You can get the grungiest of stuff that most people are going to just throw away, and then you don't have to distress it yourself because it's already there. You just want to wash it, clean it, and then both wash it and clean it, apparently. But you want to make sure that it's clean, and but it can still look grungy. If it doesn't look grungy, there are many, many, many inexpensive ways to grunge up costumes. First and foremost, and again, I think it's probably the Haunter's number one tool, and that is great stuff. You take great stuff, you spray it through the backside of the fabric and let it expand through the fabric, you can create anything from dirt to brains to intestines to just depending on how you use the great stuff. And the cool thing about great stuff is it does not wash out of those clothes ever. So you can make sure that the clothes don't reek and still keep them nicely distressed. Another tool that I like to use a lot, especially if I'm doing anything like vomit, running nose, pus, anything like that, is Sobo fabric glue. Sobo fabric glue dries with sort of a little bit of a sheen to it. It dries clear, but you can add color to it. So if you want to make it look like vomit, you can do that. I often like to put a layer of it over blood. You know, if I've used acrylic paint, which works very well as well, but you know, put acrylic paint on something and then cover it with Sobo glue, then it looks like wet blood, or it looks like wet vomit or wet mucus or wet, I don't know, whatever you want it to look like. And it, you know, after it dries, it stays in the fabric and it looks really good. The other thing that I strongly recommend people invest in when they're going to do their own Haunt costumes is go to, again, the thrift store, pick up some junked up cheese graters or wood rasps or files, because you will use these on fabric all the time to wear out knees, to rip out pockets, to shred, so that it doesn't look like that bad zigzag cut that you see people do at the bottom of jeans to make them look like they're worn out. You know, it's this cut up and down looks like a school plays pirate costumes. Yeah, don't do that. Don't do that. Just take a cheese grater, bundle up the bottom of the jeans, and rub it over the cheese grater until the fabric just starts to shred. Because that way, it looks like it actually aged that way and wasn't just cut by the mom of a fourth grader who got wrangled into doing the costumes for the school play. Like I said, acrylic paint is just will work for everything. And don't be afraid to just slather it on and let it mix together and let it run together, let it drip. Here's where you use your Visqueen. Put it down on the floor, hang stuff up, and just hit it. Hit it with paint in the right places. Let the paint flow. Let it drip down. Because again, sometimes those happy accidents of where paint just happens to fall make things look really, really cool. You can even, you know, I always say dirty stuff up. Don't make it look new, because if it looks like it came out of the bag, there's something wrong. You know, you gotta add your own touches to it, grungy it up. There was one particular time I was doing a student film, and we were filming at a small castle. Yeah, it was a small castle, but it happened to be in Illinois. I don't know. Some crazy person built a small castle. And it was supposed to be a medieval broadsword fight with a demon. And I show up as the talent. I was the actor in this student film. And which I don't know whether I still have a copy of or not. I'll have to go back and watch that. But anyway, My costume showed up, and it was very clean and completely pressed. And I looked at them, and I said, "This makes no sense at all. Why would I be wearing something that looks like it just came out of a bag at Party City?" And don't misunderstand me. Party City is fine. It's a great place to get stuff to start with, and then you have to embellish it to make it unique and give it depth. But we were on set. I mean, we were out, you know, in the woods next to this castle that some crazy rich person had built in Illinois. And I said, you know, we got to do something about this. We got to make sure that this costume looks like it's been worn and sweat in. And they said, "Scott, do whatever you want to do." And I said, "No, I'm going to ruin these clothes. They will always be this costume. So do you ever want to clean them up or make them look new again? Because if so, what I'm going to do to it is going to make it impossible to make that happen." And they said, "No, just do it." So, no joke, I found a mud puddle near my car and took the clothes, took the costume, threw them into a mud puddle, backed my car back and forth over it a couple times, got it all grungy, ripped out the hems, just so it looked like it had actually been worn. It's so important to do that with your costuming, and there are such cheap ways to do it. I've taught a couple seminars in it over the years, and you can always, you know, just make sure that when you're making things look grungy, get your cheese graters, grate them in the right places, get your blood, which is your acrylic paint, your great stuff, your Sobo glue, and go to town. You'll just have, it's a lot of fun, actually, to just kind of gunk up stuff. A lot of people say, is there a cheap way to do masks? And there are some great haunters out there who will do masks on, basically you take a latex mask, cut it apart, and reapply it to, a nylon stocking. So you have like a completely movable mask. That's a great way to take a relatively inexpensive latex mask and make it move like a silicone mask. You can take, I actually like taking just bags like burlap sacks and creating characters that they're so hideously deformed that they feel they need to cover their faces. So you get, you know, old pillowcases and put drawstrings in them, cut out eyes, put some sort of mesh behind the cutouts, and then make it look like blood is seeping through the pillowcase. What people's imaginations fill in those kinds of situations, it's like, "Oh, I'm glad he's wearing that pillowcase over his head. I don't want to see what it really looks like." You know, and it's cheap. It's cheap. Again, planning ahead, writing your story in such a way that it's you don't have to have those super high-end masks to sell it. The other thing that I think is important is you can get cheap, beat-up mannequins. I've even known people who have used inflatable dolls, the ones that are normally used for more private purposes. But I've seen them take those, dress them, and use them as remarkably inexpensive mannequins. Because let's face it, you know, mannequins are really, really expensive. And if you're going to try to do that traditional statue scare where you've got mannequin, mannequin, actor, mannequin, 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 the mannequins always look like mannequins. I would strongly recommend going to your thrift store, buying some jumpsuits or just pants and shirt and shoes and stitching them together and filling them with old newspaper and then putting a mask over where the head would be and fill that. And that mask, like I said, could be one of your pillowcases. If you've got, you know, five people lined up in pillowcases with pillowcases over their heads and one of them comes to life, it will work. And it will work very, very inexpensively. If you can afford posable mannequins, great, get them. That's fine. But this is for those folks who have the time, who have the interest, stitch all the clothing together and stuff them with newspaper, pose them, and that way they actually probably will look even more like real people because mannequins are all built to a perfect size. stuffed clothes look fat and bunchy, and you know, you may have to sit them in a chair and, you know, maybe glue them in place so that they look like they're sitting naturally, but it's a cheap way to make mannequins, and if you put the same mask on the mannequin that you put on the actor, your guests will never be able to tell the difference, and you'll scare the heck out of them. All right, so let's move on to some makeup ideas, some super cheap makeup ideas. One of my absolute favorite things, cheap makeup ideas for haunted attractions, is a mud mask. And I've presented this a couple of different times, but I just used it again for a photo shoot. I was doing a sample photo, and I needed something to change the texture of my skin. So what I did was I got out a mud mask and put it all over. I mean, and it's one that had mud in it. You know, now there are so many that have that dry with like a gel quality to them, which is cool for something different. But I wanted that pasty, rotting away kind of look. And I took that mud mask, I put it all over my face and all through my hair and just let it dry. Then I went back and powdered it all white and then drew really awful clown makeup over the top of it. Super cheap. Super cheap. Super effective. Because after it dries, when you move your face, it gets natural cracks. And if you want to, you can go back in and with makeup, fill in those cracks to kind of bring them out, make them more obvious. They might look like age lines. They might look like you're decomposing. You can use this for clowns. You can use this for mummies. You can use this for zombies. And they make mud masks in different colors. They make gray ones. They make green ones. They make brown ones. They make ones that dry almost white. And then when you're done at the end of the night, when you wash it all off, and yes, it washes out fine. It doesn't permanently stick in your hair or anything like that. But when you wash it all out at the end of the night, your face feels great. You know, you've just kind of gotten a whole facial during the course of your day. And what is also cool is as you're going through the night, you know, people say, does it sweat off? Yes, it will sweat off. So you kind of have to go back in and maybe reapply. But sometimes you'll find that as it chips off or breaks off or sweats off, it creates another look, which is really pretty cool. And if it gets kind of gunky because you sweat, when you take your break or sit in front of a fan, it dries again and looks just as wonderfully gross. So cheap makeup tip number one, mud masks. Use them as your base. It gives you a really, really wonderfully icky skin tone. You can also use it in your hair. One thing that I wouldn't skimp on is brushes. Makeup brushes. Get yourself a set of maybe three or four really good makeup brushes and one or two really good makeup sponges. You can use crummy sponges at other times, but they make an egg-shaped silicone sponge that is so good for blending and so good for applying color and makeup. You know, if you know what you're doing in makeup, great. If you don't, having the right tools will really, really help you. As far as brushes go, I would have a big, giant, fluffy powder brush to apply powder at the end to sort of set your makeup. I would have, my favorite brush to use actually is a two-sided brush. It has an angle tip on one side and then a fine tip on the other. And I like it because you can just flip it around in your hand and do detail work, and then you can do big block work and then blend it all together with your little egg-shaped sponge. And then I would get a contour brush or a blush brush, which is like a shorter bristled, fuller brush. And I think with those basic brushes, you can pretty much do anything you want to do. And if you invest a little bit of extra money in your brushes, then of course you want to take care of them. Make sure that you clean them properly, clean your silicone sponge properly. If you're using crap makeup sponges, great, throw them away. Not a problem. Not a problem at all. But if you get great tools, then the stuff that you apply, in my opinion, can actually be cheaper. if you want a basic makeup kit, you know, if you can get a good deal on a makeup kit from, I don't know, Ben Nye or whatever, whoever makes makeup now, great, do it. But if in a pinch, you can basically go to any drugstore and, or now grocery store or Target or Walmart or whatever, and get just regular makeup. If you've got a really, really pale color, a white or a super, super light beige, a black, a brown, and a red, you can do some pretty incredible things. Especially if you're doing it over something like a mud mask, which already has all of the texture in it. All you have to do is use your color to sort of add a little oomph over the top. And something a lot of people don't know, the best lipstick to use is usually the cheapest lipstick to use. It, for some reason, stays on better. It stains better. I mentioned if you can get white, black, brown, red, and that can be, you know, in the form of foundation or pencil or whatever. But if your red is like this super vibrant red, we'll call it little old lady red, that red that was really popular in the 50s, get that in the cheapest makeup you can find, and you will have a lipstick that will stay on forever. And you can dull it down with your brown if you want to make it like a scab, or you want to do some sort of blood effect with it. But it will stay on your skin forever and forever and forever. And quite often, even after you wash it off, you'll see the stain marks on your skin. But you don't have to worry about it sweating off. And it's cheap, which is the whole point. I mentioned sponges. I mentioned getting an egg silicone sponge if you can. You can use cheap makeup sponges to put on your contour and your base and whatever. But another thing that's kind of fun is to get natural sponges or stipple sponges. And you can lightly dab those in makeup and plop those on your face, and it can give you all kinds of texture. And again, all this stuff is cheap. It is cheap, cheap, cheap. So you have to take a little bit of time to learn how to use it. And like I said, creativity will provide. It will provide for those who only have a tiny amount of money to invest. Another thing I would invest in is either spirit gum or liquid latex. In a pinch, you can even use eyelash glue, because then you can just glue stuff to your face and then cover it with your makeup, and it creates texture. You don't have to invest in high-end prosthetics. You don't have to learn how to mold. I mean, yes, if you know how to do that stuff and you can afford to do that stuff, great, do it. It's wonderful. But if you don't, there's a lot of cheap ways around it. If you're using liquid latex, for example, and you want to make it appear as though your brains are popping out of your forehead, one of the coolest things to use, in my opinion, is you can put a layer of latex down and glue some elbow macaroni to your forehead, put a little torn either paper towel or tissue paper, Kleenex, soaked in liquid latex, put that around it so it looks like the skin is peeling away and the brains are coming forward. Paint that macaroni over the top with latex again so it all holds into place. Dab it with some pink and some red, and you've got brains coming out of your forehead. One of the things, I had a friend in college who was a theater student, and what he used to do is he would take spirit gum, which is an adhesive that you use on your skin. He would paint spirit gum on his face and then take coffee grounds and lay it into the spirit gum, and it would give him sort of a 5 o'clock shadow. And he would do this when he was trying to get into the bars when he wasn't old enough. Apparently it worked. Or they just thought, here's somebody crazy enough to glue coffee to his face, so let's let him in. He probably could use a drink. Another thing that is kind of fun to use is like cornflakes or cereal. Crunch it up and use that liquid latex to apply that to your face. You can make it look like you've got like a road rash, you know, where you've had skin peeled off and it just is, you've got asphalt embedded in your skin. It's a neat way to do it. And again, just play with it. You know, take a night that, you know, you're not doing anything and call your friends over and say, hey, bring something stupid that I can glue to your face and we'll see how it works. When I was in college, I actually did an entire clown makeup using nothing but liquid latex and yarn. I actually took yarn, glued it to my face, and used different colors, and ran the yarn in like a spiral out from the center so that the yarn was right next to each other, and I would create the round cheeks out of that on latex. I did it around my mouth in three different colors. I did it around my eyes. And when you're working with latex, it's always good to have a blow dryer set on cool. Otherwise, it hurts. So set your blow dryer on cool and use that to dry your latex. And again, blow dryer, cheap. You know, people don't hang on to blow dryers as long as they used to. You can get a blow dryer at pretty much any thrift store. And the cool thing is it doesn't have to heat up anymore because you'll never use that. So that will dry your latex quicker. Dry your latex a lot quicker. A cool idea, and I'm stealing this, I will admit this fully, wholeheartedly, and honestly, I'm stealing this from drag queens. One of the coolest effects, I think, and it's really subtle in Haunt, is to make your eyebrows go away. To make it look like your eyebrows have either been shaved or you never had them. This comes in very handy if you're doing something like Aliens or Asylums or... So what you can do is, in order to make your eyebrows go away, there is such a thing called eyebrow wax, but there's no point in investing in that because you want something cheap, and you want something cheap that works really well. Get a washable glue stick. Right now there's a glue stick that, when it goes on, it's purple, and then when it dries, it's clear. Well, you can use that, work that into your eyebrows, and then take a little tiny eyebrow brush or eyebrow comb, and use that to smooth your eyebrows up against your forehead, up against your brow, and it makes them just kind of go away. And once that glue dries, they become very smooth. You put makeup over the top of them, and then drag queens will go back in and draw their eyebrows over the top. But if you just want to make them go away, just put makeup right over the top of the glue stick, and it makes your eyebrows disappear. It's a very cool effect. Oh, it works with clowns, too. It's very cool when you're working with clowns. Also, when it comes to makeup, you know, everybody wants to make blood. I have shared my own favorite blood recipe. I'm sure everyone has their own favorite blood recipe. It's all stuff you can get at the grocery store. But my favorite blood recipe is dark corn syrup, a couple of drops of red, and about half as many drops of blue food coloring. Actually, maybe a quarter of the amount. I'd say like 4 or 5 drops of red and 1 drop of blue, and stir it all into that dark corn syrup. Now, I like to use dark corn syrup because I like blood that is darker in color, richer, browner. If you like bright red blood, you can use light corn syrup. And then my favorite thing to add at the end is just a little sprinkling of cocoa powder. It makes the blood taste better if you're using it in your mouth, and it also makes it just a little bit more opaque. It's not quite as crystal clear as some of the other blood that you might be able to buy in other places. So that's dark corn syrup, red, and just a little bit of blue food coloring, and cocoa powder. Mix those all together, and you've got my favorite fake blood recipe. And you can make it up, you know, to make up enough to do an entire cast is... just maybe, I don't know, $4 or $5 max. And that's because you can't buy food coloring by the drop. You have to buy it by the bottle. But you may actually just have everything that you need in your kitchen right now. And it tastes pretty good, too. It has a very chocolatey flavor to it. So if you want to have a little blood capsule in your mouth and bite into it every now and then, spit it out. It's kind of fun. So let's talk a little bit about props. And one of the things that I've had great luck with, and that is using my computer to find public domain images, things like train tickets, things like old posters that have now fallen into public domain. And what public domain means is you don't have to pay rights and royalties for them. Nobody owns the rights to use them anymore, so you can use them. There are entire websites dedicated to public domain images, video, music. So just search public domain images or public domain music or whatever, and you'll find these all online. Even classic certain classic movies have fallen into public domain. They're usually the ones that you see in the clearance bins for $3 on DVD. Just saying. But because they don't have to pay rights for them. But you can go there and get imagery and use that imagery on your computer, print it up, and you can make your own props. Invest in a printer. I know a lot of people don't have printers anymore. Invest in a printer. It doesn't have to be a high-end printer. It does have to be a color printer. But you can print up so many wonderful props, and whether it's either labels for bottles and things, or whether it is, like for example, in the Vault of Souls, we had one hallway that was all death certificates, but they were death certificates that had been plastered to the wall. Well, those were all printed on my computer. I wrote them all up. I was actually able to put the names of people who I knew would be visiting into the scenery. And instead of investing a ton of money in paint, we invested a ton of money in glue, and it was actually wallpaper paste. And we pasted up all of these printed up death certificates, and it made something really, really cool. So and very personalized. The other things that you can do is do handwritten notes. And you're going to say, well, yes, but our guests will take them or they'll get destroyed. Okay, print 20 of them and only use one at a time. It's just a great, cheap way to add unique props that continue to focus and tell your story. There are some things that you can't really skimp on, and I'm a firm believer that you do want to invest in a few what I'll call hero props or hero masks or hero costumes. These are the things that are visible for long periods of time. Because, I mean, let's face it, most haunt actors you see for a few seconds and they're gone back into the darkness. So what you want to do is those characters that are, say, I don't know, Q-line or characters that you see for a longer period of time, that's where you spend your money. Invest your money in those. And when people see that, then when they see the next character who, you know, you invest in a great silicone mask of a clown for people to see for a long period of time. Then the next clown they see is done with a mud mask and white powder and cheap lipstick, but you only see him for a short period of time. The guests are going to think it's the same level of quality that they just saw on the silicone mask. So I'm not saying don't spend money on some key pieces. Definitely do that. Do the same with your scenic. Do the same with your costuming. Do the same with your props. Find those hero items, but make sure that when you've got them, that you have them properly lit, that people can see them for a long period of time, and that way the cheap stuff, where you've saved your money so you can afford to buy the hero props, when they see the cheap stuff, they go, oh, I bet that's the same quality as that thing I saw earlier. Your mind just automatically does that. So I guess in sort of summing it all up, there is always a way to make something happen in a budget. Make it cheap, make it fast, make it good. Make sure that you've got enough time to make it cheap and good, because you're going to be doing a lot of work. I really, really hope that these ideas that I've shared with you, especially the one about plan based on what you know you can execute, in other words, write your story based on the location that you're in, what you have, what you can get a hold of, find ways to make those things work cohesively. And if you do that, hopefully these tips will help you be more cost-effective haunters, so that you can either put more into your home haunt or put more money in your pocket if you have a professional haunt. Thank you so much once again for listening. Please join us on our our Facebook group. We have a Facebook group for A Scott in the Dark. You can just search it on Facebook, and we will be happy to allow you to join. It's become a real cool little community where people will actually share ideas, share their thoughts about what they hear on the shows. Also, make sure that you find A Scott in the Dark. We do have our own YouTube channel, which will have this particular show on it, so check it out there, and you can see how many times during the course of the show I moved my hands, and as I'm talking about things like, you know, making your eyebrows go away, I was touching my eyebrows and all that sort of goofy stuff. But yeah, join us on Facebook, join us on YouTube, and I hope you've enjoyed this episode. I had a lot of fun talking about ways to make things really good and really cheap. So until next time, rest in peace.